Open the window. It's also if it's too, if it gets too hot. Okay, we are on the bottom of Diamond Bays. Gemara says, so this is the, we really should have finished this piece with the last Gemara. So just to refresh our memories, we had a big machlokes. If schach pasul is a problem, if it splits down the middle of your sukkah, machlokes is if schach pasul splits your sukkah in two, if it's four tfachim, or four amos is the shiur, just like dofen akuma. That's the background to this last little piece of the Gemara. That was a machlokas we had in the past, and we're trying to prove who's right and who's wrong. Is schach pasul going to break apart your sukkah if it splits all the way down the middle? Is it arba tfachim, that's a problem, or arba amos, just like dofen akuma? So Gemara says, Toshma, I come here to prove. Sechecha ben nisarim shel erez, a person used it for his schach, boards made out of erez. Erez is cedar. Sheyesh ben arbo, and they are four tfachim wide. Diria kol psula. Everyone says, it's pasul. Ein bo en arbo. Once the boards are less than four tfachim, Rabbi Meir poisel, Rabbi Huda machshir. Now we're back there. Machlokes, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Meir says you still can't use it. Rabbi Huda says that it's good. Moide Rabbi Meir is less than four tfachim. Moide Rabbi Meir, shem yesh ben neser la neser, kumalai neser. That if Rabbi Meir is willing to agree, and if you have enough space between the boards, kimolei neser, the space of a board, and plus a little bit extra barley, shemeniach pesel b'neim, and you fill up that space with schach kasher, that's called pesel, ukshera, then it will be kasher. So that's our quote. So what do we have so far? We have everyone seems to agree that if you use for schach boards that are four tfachim, you're finished. Finish. Nothing you can do about it. But apparently, if Rabbi Meir is masking, that if you go ahead and you remove every other board, and even though they're four tefachim, if you fill in the empty space with schach kasher, all of a sudden it's okay. But that can't be. That doesn't make any sense. Bishlomo, it's all good. Laman damer bein beemtz bein mitzab arba amis. According to the one who holds schach pasul, it's only going to split your sukkah in two. If it's down the middle, if it's four amos, okay. So then all is good. Mishumachik sheira. That's why it's kosher, because you don't have anywhere in the sukkah that is schach pasul of four amos, only four tefachim. But what's the problem? Elo, rather laman damer beemtzab arba. The one who holds it in the middle for tfachim is going to split your sukkah in two. Amai kshera! How can Rabbi Meir say it's kosher? How can it be kosher? Amar Rav Huna, braid Rav Yeshua. Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yeshua, says, Hacha basukkah deloi havya elishmoina mitzum tzamois askinan. Hacha, here, basukkah, in a sukkah, deloi havya, that does not have, elishmoina amois, only eight amos mitzum tzamos. Exactly. Mitzum tzamos means precisely. A skinan we are dealing with. So the case that's gonna we're going to have to make sense out of this is that how in the world can you hold that a sukkah that has schach pasul down the middle, that's four tefachim, how could the sukkah still be kasher if you hold by definition that that sukkah is pasul? So the answer is, we're talking about a sukkah that's exactly 8 amos long. V'yohiv neser u'pesel, v'neser u'pesel, v'neser u'pesel, mehagisa. You put alternating boards and schach kasher on one side. Mehagisa, from this, gisa means a side. V'neser u'pesel, v'neser u'pesel, v'neser u'pesel, mehagisa. And you put alternating on the other side. Dehavelohu, shnei psalim ba'emsa. Because you're alternating, you're going to end up with two psalim, two four tfachim spots, strips, that are pesel, that are schach kasher, be'emza, in the middle. Ve'ika hechshar sukkah be'emza, and you have a kasher sukkah in the middle. So, we have to try to picture this the best we can. The drawing they have in this particular Gemara is with neser pesel, neser pesel. You know, it starts off with neser. So it starts off with a board. So with our math, when you have your sukkah, you're going to start off with a neser on one side and a neser on the other side. And because it's eight amos, how many, do you remember from our earlier discussions in the Masechta, how many tefachim are in an amo? We said there was an opinion in the Beis HaMikdash for the Kalim, so then it was five tefachim per amo. But what do we assume? How do we start off? That the Arun Tisha Kaparas Tefach, how do you know that the Arun was nine tefachim high? Because it was an amo v'chetzi, an amo and a half. Well, if an amo and a half is nine tefachim, then what's one amo? Six tefachim. So 8 times 6 will get you to how many tefachim this is. What's the answer?
42.
What?
48.
Are we all in agreement?
Oh, lower.
8 times 6, 48. So, we have 48 of whatever length over here in this stack. And we want, and the boards are 4 tefachim. And the space between them is 4 tefachim. So we have to divide. So what's 4 divided by 48? How many sections are we going to have over here? Exactly. So they're going to be 6 on each side. So when you divide that up into 6 boards or space on each side, so they're going to be even. So if you start with a Neser, Pesel, Neser, Pesel, Neser, Pesel, what you're going to end up with is 2 Pesels in the middle. What does that mean, 2 Pesels? And these are Kasher Staff in the middle. And then 5 more sections of board, space, board, space, board, space. Yeah?
What's the point of doing a half and then half and just all the way?
Because the Gemara wants you to know that you start with a Neser on each side. Because when you do it like that, you will end up with 2 Staff Kasher sections in the middle.
Oh, you're saying you teach them to all the way through, then you'd end up with a Pesel on the other end.
Right. And that wouldn't work. So what we need is 4 and 4, so you have 8 tefachim of staff kasher in the middle of the sukkah. So what does that do for us? Well, how many tefachim do you need for a sukkah to be kasher?
4.
Length and width?
4 by 4.
7 by 7, right?
Okay.
Rosh Hashanah, yeah? Smallest sukkah, 10 tefachim high, but length and width is?
7 by 7.
So 8 is more than 7, so we're good. What do you mean we're good? What are you talking about? So how does this solve our problems? Because if you take the dimensions, what's left? How many amos are left until the wall of the sukkah over here? How many amos are left? So we're taking away, remember we had 48 divided by 2. So it's 24 tefachim total on each side. You're taking away the 6, 24 minus 6. So what's 24 minus 6? 24 minus 6?
18.
Yes?
18.
18. So 18 plus this 4, which is the Sfat Kasher. So then how much is left, amo-wise, from the kosher Sfat until the wall of the Sukkah? 18 tefachim. So we said there are 6 per amo. 6 tefachim per amo. So how many amos are left? How many amos do you have from the Sfat Kasher to the wall? How much space is that in tefachim? 18 divided by 3. Right? 18 divided by 6 is? How much?
3
amos. 3 amos. Can you say Dofen Akuma? Can you say Dofen Akuma?
Yeah.
Yes?
I think so.
When can you no longer say Dofen Akuma?
After 4 amos.
4 amos. 3 amos is more or less than 4 amos?
Less.
4 is less. Therefore, we can say Dofen Akuma. Should we go through this one more time? It's all math, I'm sorry. I'm not good at math, but I'm able to do this. You guys definitely can do this. The Gemara said that we're trying to work out how you can have a board that goes in the middle of your sukkah, it's 4 tefachim, and it not destroy your sukkah. Right? Because what should happen here is that your sukkah is finished. Because that divides your sukkah in half, what we've been discussing in the past. Now, if you hold, you know, it requires 4 amos to kill your sukkah. So fine, this is good. But if you hold, 4 tefachim kills your sukkah because it splits it into a sukkah with 2 walls on this side and a sukkah with 2 walls on this side to finish. So how can it be? How can it be that we're saying, even Rabbi Meir agrees, that as long as you alternate spots here, where you have board and then sukkah, board, sukkah, it doesn't solve your problem because you still have 4 tefachim of sukkah puzzles splitting down the middle of your sukkah or wherever it is. Are you with me on the question? Is anyone not following the question? Say it again. Say it again. Could you open the other window?
The starting point of the whole conversation that we have to remember is that if you have a board that is 4 inches wide going down the middle of your sukkah anywhere, it's a problem because it's going to split your sukkah into two. The only way out of it is by saying dofen akuma, meaning that your board is within 4 amos of your wall. Okay, well then that's okay because we can say dofen akuma. You won't be able to sit under it. But at least we'll be able to say dofen akuma. But if it's in the middle, you're stuck. So Gemara says, okay, we're going to set up the case for you like this. The sukkah is exactly 8 amos long. Okay, how big is that approximately in normal measurements? I mean, amos is about 1.5 feet, let's say. So how much is 8 amos? It's about 12 feet long. It's about a 12-foot long sukkah, which is probably your typical sukkah you have this mountain set, right? Fine. So this sukkah is approximately 12 feet long. Again, it doesn't have a fourth wall, it only has 3 walls. So what we did was, we said there's Neser Pesel on one side, and then Neser Pesel on the other side, meaning 6 sections of 4 tefachim each on each side of the sukkah. They meet up in the middle, so there are 2 sections of 4 tefachim each, for a total of 8 tefachim, that is schach kosher in the middle. And what do we care now about anything that's on the sides? The answer is, well, the schach pasul is going to be a problem. But that's okay, because we can say dofen akuma until the schach kosher. So the truth is that this 12-foot long sukkah, only 8 tefachim of it is kosher. Because we're going to say dofen akuma all the way until that schach. But those 8 tefachim of that sukkah are the kosher part of that sukkah. Yeah? So that's how Rebbe Meir can say, even though, well, that's how the Manda Omer, whoever it is, and we have this Rav at the beginning, and Rav at the end, and Rabba, so all of the names, notwithstanding, whichever opinion it is, if you hold that schach pasul will kill your sukkah once it's 4 tefachim, then you can still understand this brisa in this scenario. That you can have boards that are alternating, and they're 4 tefachim, and it still won't kill your sukkah, because you have to meet, you have 2 pesels meet in the middle, you'll have 8 tefachim of kosher schach, and you can say dofen akuma if the sukkah in length is 8 amos. Because then you'll have 3 amos on each side, and you'll be able to say dofen akuma. That's the Gemara's answer to that problem. Period. So that's where we're up to on Yerches Amud Aleph. So now it's almost parallel to Tosfos Ein Baruba. Amar Abaye, Avir Shleisha the Sukkah Gedola. You have airspace of 3 tefachim in a large sukkah. Miato bein bekanim bein bishpudin have miut. So picture your sukkah. You're using real bamboo. Yeah, you're picturing this case? You're going to use real bamboo. Is anybody actually use real bamboo or just everyone use mat? You use actual bamboo, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're putting your bamboo on your sukkah, and in the middle of the sukkah, let's say you have a 3-wall sukkah, not 4 walls, you have 3 walls, and in the middle of your sukkah, you leave empty space. This empty space is more than 3 tefachim. Well, you can't say that bamboo is loved to each other now, and now you don't have a kosher sukkah. Because there's empty space in the middle of your bamboo. Good? So what did you do? Umiyatoi, you minimized it. How do you minimize empty space? By putting something there. So you minimize your empty space, bein bakanim, whether it's with reeds, meaning you put another piece of bamboo in. Bein bishpudin, or you take a metal spit, or who knows what, a wooden spit, something that's makabel tumah, and you put that in the empty space, and now you don't have 3 tefachim of empty space anymore. You have some schach pasul and some empty space. Either way, now you can say lavud. So you're fine, right? So in a sukkah gedola, you're good to go. Once you minimize your airspace, either with schach kosher or with schach pasul. Besukkah kitana. But if you're dealing with a sukkah ketana, now, what is a sukkah ketana? Whenever the Gemara says sukkah ketana, what does it mean? How small is small?
It means the minimum shear. Yes? So whenever you find the sukkah katana, it means 7 tvachim by 7 tvachim. And, I don't know, perhaps by 10 tvachim high. But all we care about for now is it's 7 by 7. If you're talking about a sukkah katana and you have airspace of 3 tvachim.
Well, you can picture this, right? In this sukkah, this is the stack. So the whole thing is only 7 tvachim. So if you have space of 3 tvachim, so how much is left? You only got 4 tvachim of anything left over there. So let's say you have 2 on each side, right? So these are filled in with whatever.
So that's a sukkah katana. So what do you have? You have 4 tefachim of schach.
So in a sukkah katana, as Gemara say, v'kanim havi miut. If you minimize your 3 tefach airspace with bamboo, with schach kasher, then that will minimize the airspace and you'll be good to go. B'shpudin, with a spit or some form of schach puzzle, loy have a mute. It does not minimize your airspace. So why is that? Well, because you don't have extra sukkah. You have nothing. How can you call that schach? You only have 4 tvachim of schach. And you need 7 tvachim of schach. So if you can have 7 tvachim of schach by saying lavud, okay, so you're good to go. But if even if you say lavud, but you still don't have 7 tvachim of schach because you have schach puzzle there, because you minimized your airspace with schach puzzle, so that's not good enough. And that's talking about from the side. What's talking about from the side? So we're going to backtrack. Does Rashi say anything on this? Take a look at Rashi. It's like a little bit lower than the middle. Rashi writes, Vohani mile. These words. Which words? I mean, what we just said about a sukkah katana? What are we focusing on now? Rashi writes, the avir pachos mishleisha lavud veino poisel b'sukkah. That airspace, less than 3 tefachim, is called lavud, and it doesn't passel your sukkah. Now, as Rashi says, we are backtracking. We are now going back to a general issue. We're not zeroing in on what we just spoke about, the sukkah katana. That's not what we're zeroing in on, even though the Gemara sounds like that's what it's talking about, right? Gemara, when it says, v'hane mile, you assume Hanei Milei goes on the immediately prior statement. In this case, Rashi is commenting because he wants you to know this Hanei Milei is going on the general issue we're dealing with, not specifically the prior statement of the Sukkah Ketan. Okay, so again, V'Hanei Milei, and these words, that Avir in the middle of a Sukkah is a problem, Bein B'Sukkah Gedola, Bein B'Sukkah Ketana, Minatzat. Is a problem on the side that you can minimize it and you're good to go. Or that it works. Hani mile, that you can have less than 3 tvachim and we'll say lavud. So we've been assuming lavud the entire time. And lavud works no matter what, which we've been assuming that. The Gemara is suggesting that this idea that you can say lavud is only when it's minatzad. When it's on the side. And you're trying to connect your schach to your walls. But if it's a strip of airspace in the middle of your sukkah, that's actually a machlokes between Rav Acha and Ravina. So let's make sure we're on the same page. This could kill a lot of sukkahs in the world, it sounds like. So let's make sure we're getting this right. Until now, we've been discussing schach puzzle in the middle of your sukkah. Yeah? So in the picture that we've been drawing, if you have a 4 tefach board running straight down the middle of your sukkah, and you only have 3 walls, that could potentially kill your sukkah. Unless you hold you need 4 amos. But assuming that we hold you need 4 tefachim, and that's already schach puzzle, so then this sukkah is no good. Because you don't have a sukkah with 3 walls, not on this side and not on that side. It splits your sukkah into 2. Now what if we would remove it? And we would just leave airspace in the middle. Right? That was the example we were just talking about. Benji uses bamboo for his sukkah. So this is so relevant to that. Or if you're using mats, but you have to use 2 mats to cover your sukkah because it's that big. But there's airspace in between your mats. So is that a problem or is it not a problem? You'll say, well, how much airspace? If it's less than 3 tefachim, we say, lavud. Says the Gemara, everyone agrees that that's true. On the side. So if your mat covers the whole middle of your sukkah, but it's less than 3 tefachim from your wall, then everyone agrees you say it's leveled to the wall. To the wall! The shaila is, what about airspace in the middle? Will the airspace split your sukkah into two? And in the parallel case to the sach puzzle we've been discussing, if that's not sach puzzle, it's airspace, it actually passes your sukkah because it splits it into two? Or can we say lavud in the middle of the sach as well? That's what the Gemara wants to know.
Yeah, if it's on the side, it's lavud because it's still there.
No. But it's lavud. The Gemara says that we're willing to say lavud for sure works on the side. But the question is if it works in the middle. So that's a machlokes, says the Gemara. Hani mili min atzad. Ava behemza, pligi v'ravacha v'ravina. It's a machlokes in the middle between Ravacha and Ravina. Chad Omar, one of them said, yesh lavud behemza. There is lavud even in the middle of a sukkah. So if you have two mats that don't reach each other, as long as they're less than 3 tefachim away, they'll connect. They're viewed as connected. If you have bamboo, and they're not close enough together, no problem, we'll say lavud be'emtza. V'chadamar, but one of them said, ain lavud be'emtza. We don't say lavud be'emtza, we only say lavud mina tzad. So, wait, this could end up being really crazy, right? Can you imagine, Benji, does every piece of bamboo touch each other?
No.
Wait a minute. So if we don't say lavud in the middle, then you have a strip of airspace going all the way from one side of your sukkah to the other. Right? Each piece of bamboo is separate from each other.
Yes.
So you're always going to have two pieces of bamboo, and in between them will be airspace
all
the way across the sukkah.
Yes.
So you probably have a four-wall sukkah anyways. It's probably not a problem. Because even if you split your sukkah into two, it's probably two separate kosher sukkahs either way. Maybe not. Because each strip of bamboo has airspace between them. Do we say lavud?
It's not big enough to be considered lavud.
Right. It's not a problem, right? Because they're close enough to say lavud. But one man damar holds, we don't say lavud in the middle of a sukkah. Does that mean that the sukkah might actually get split into pieces and then we'll say it's not a kosher sukkah? Anyway, so the top places, I think, that this addresses this. But for now, that's what it sounds like. So that's a machlokes. One says there is lavud be'emtza, and one says there's not lavud be'emtza. This is, we learn in a braisa. Kaira, hayotze mikosel ze. Sorry. Backtrack 1 second. Pligar Ravacha Ravina. Chadamar one says yesh lavud be'emtza, v'chadamar one says ain lavud be'emtza. There's no lavud in the middle of the sukkah. My taima, what's the reason? Demand to Amar. Yesh lavud be'emtza. What's the reason for the one that says we do say lavud in the middle? So he says, I can prove it to you from a brisa. I can prove to you we say lavud in the middle from a brisa. Desanias, we learn in a brisa regarding Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Eruv. Kaira. Our famous kaira. Remember, kaira means the beam that's on top. It's on top of two doorposts. It's on top of whatever. It's on top of a mavui. It's a kaira. It's a beam that's on top. Hayoyte mikoysel zeh. It emerges from one wall. Ve'enen agas mikoysel achir. But it doesn't reach all the way to the other wall. So, we'll imagine the following scenario. You have an alleyway, right? It's called a mavui, right? A mavui only had 3 walls. It didn't have 4. And it leads you to a Rosh HaSarabim. So in order for a person to be able to carry in that mavui, even if it's his own, you have to make one of two things. Either, does anybody remember what? Either a lechi or a koira. The lechi is the post that you stick into the ground. We discussed putting the PVC pipes on poles, on phone poles in the past, if you remember. That's also a lechi. It's a post. Or a koira. A koira means a beam that goes on top. Those are the options. So you have a very interesting scenario where you have a mavui, and I don't know, you know, the last guy that was building whatever he did, he had a piece of wood that does stick out like a kaira from all the way from one wall, but because of decay or your kids playing ball or whatever, it no longer reaches the other wall. It almost does, but it no longer reaches the other wall. Can you picture it, like in your mind? I don't know if you can see the picture here, but in this picture here, they have an alleyway of some sort, and here is the piece of wood reaching all the way across, but it doesn't quite reach.
Between two
circles? No, this is just an alleyway. Hilchos Shabbos. I'm not talking about Hilchos Sukkah right now. Hilchos Shabbos. So you want to be able to carry, right? If you have an alleyway like this, you have to have a kura. And then you can carry because that's a virtual fourth wall. You might have to make an Eruv, what do you call it? Shitufei Mavuos. You might have to make an Eruv in addition. But we're only talking about the kura and not even the lechi. You're just talking about the kura right now. So this kura happens to be, it makes it almost all the way across to the other side, but it falls a little short. So what's the din? So the Brisa says, kura, the beam that sticks out of this wall, and it doesn't negia, it doesn't touch the other wall. Case number one, comma. Case number two. V'chein, similarly, shtei kairos, two beams. Achas yoytze mikoysel zeh, one is coming from the right wall, from this wall. V'achas yoytze mikoysel achir, and the other one's coming out on the opposite side, from the opposing wall. V'ein anoy goyzeh b'zu, and they don't touch each other, right? So it's a very similar case. It's just in this case, the wood is coming from one side, and the wood is coming from the other side, but they don't meet in the middle. There's space in between them. If, in either case, where the wood goes from one side almost to the next, or they almost meet in the middle, if the space between the two pieces of wood, or the wood and the wall, is less than three tefachim, you don't need to bring another kaira. Lovewood. It's lovewood. Shleisha. But once it's three tefachim of space between either the beam and the wall, or between the two parts of the beam, or two beams, you have to fill in the space with another beam. You have to bring another kaira. What do you see from here? That not only do you say lavud to get the beam to the wall, but you even say lavud to do what? To connect the two beams in the middle. In the middle. So he says, I have a braisa, straight out of Hilchos Shabbos, that says you say lavud be emtza. Good? Lavud be emtza. So that seems like a pretty good proof. So we started off with a machlokis. If you have airspace in the middle of your sukkah, do we say lavud in the middle, or we only say lavud to connect your sukkah to the wall? So machlokis. So what's the reason? How does the man de Amar that says we do say lavud in the middle? How does he know? The Gemara answers from Hilchos Shabbos. Because in Hilchos Shabbos you have a case. Well, there are two cases in this braisa. One case, you're right, is with the beam doesn't reach the wall. But the other case is where you have two beams coming out next to each other. They just don't reach each other. They don't touch. So the Brisa says explicitly, as long as it's less than three tefachim between them, it's lavud. It doesn't use the terminology lavud, but that's what it means. That's what it means. Ve'idach, that's a kasha. When the Gemara says ve'idach, it means, and the other opinion? And the other guy? What's he going to do with this? It's a Brisa. Ve'idach, the other one answers, shani kairos derabanan. Beams are different because they're derabanan. What do you mean, beams are different because of derabanan? Meaning the category we're dealing with here is a din derabanan. Sukkah is deraisa. Kaira from mavui is derabanan. What do you mean? You have three walls in your alleyway, right? Is it deraisa? Deraisa. Is that a rishus ha-yachid or a rishus ha-rabbit? Are 600,000 people passing through your alleyway? What? If you have a alleyway that's walled in on three sides, midrabanan, you have to have a lechi or a kaira. But midaraisa, what's that area considered? A rishus hayachid. It's got three walls. It's not a public place. It's not a rishus harabim. Come on. So the whole requirement of the kaira is only midrabanan. So that is a special leniency, midirabbanan, in the case of the karuit, because the whole din is a din derabbanan. But by sukkah, where the whole din is a din daraisa, so then we don't allow you to say lavud be'emtza.
Why would it be a din?
What?
Why would it be considered Rishus Yavin?
Because there's not, for example, according to many Rishonim, in order to be considered a Rishus Arabim, the Raisa, you need 600,000 people passing through. It's going to be pretty hard. Especially since there are three walls.
So this, like, the city would be considered Rishus.
Yeah, so that's a whole discussion, right? That's all. We discussed that a little bit in the past. Rav Moshe Shita, that because you have so many people living there, there's always going to be 600,000 people on the streets all the time. And the Chazon Ish, who said that there's more wall than airspace, remember? So that we can deal with that because there are walls. But once there is a walled-in area, it's not going to be considered a Rishus Rabin by any stretch of the imagination. Now the Gemara flips it around. My time and demandam are ain lovud b'emza. Okay, but how does the other opinion know we don't say lovud in the middle? How does he know we don't say it? This not. Oh, he has a Mishnah. You ready for this? How gruesome you want this to be on a scale from 1 to 10? Like really gruesome? Or like just like, you know, light? You want it to be gruesome? Okay. There was a murder. It was his mother-in-law. That's what makes it gruesome. And the guy came in with a... We'll play Clue. With a... A knife. That's so boring. That's not a knife. This is a knife. With a machete, with a chainsaw. Came with a chainsaw. And when his mother-in-law was sleeping and his father-in-law is away on a business trip, she's finished. Her head is lying in the middle of the living room. I don't know where the rest of her body is located now. And there are other items in the room. And there is a, well, okay, he needed to get out, and the cops were coming. So there is a skylight in the living room where her head still is, because he didn't have time to dispose of it. And he broke his way through the skylight, and he escaped. Okay, I have to change the case. It's not going to work. One detail different. Start over. His son-in-law wants to kill his mother-in-law. He has his chainsaw. And there is a skylight. And then he wants to... No, he doesn't want anyone to find out how he got in, who he is. So he breaks in through the skylight. The skylight is now open. That's what we need. The skylight is now open. Then, chainsaw, etc., cuts off her head. Head is now in the living room. And he now leaves back through the opening in the ceiling, the skylight, but the skylight was already open. That's how he got in. That's before she's dead. That's what we need. There are other items in the room, including an earthenware vase that's 2,000 years old from the Ming Dynasty that she has collected, and that is now in the room. So there are basically three things you need to know. There is a skylight that is open, and it was open before she was dead. There is a Ming vase worth millions, if not billions, of dollars. And there is a head on the floor from a formerly living person, his mother-in-law. That's the case. Are you ready? Here we go. This now we learn in the Mishnah. Aruba Shebabayis. There is a window, a skylight in a house. Uba poiseach tefach, and it is at least an opening of a tefach. So it's at least a tefach in length and width. Tuma babayis. Literally, there is tumas mace in the house. There is a dead body. There is a tuma in the house. We're going to call it. What? Come on. His mother-in-law's head. His mother-in-law's head is in the room. Kulay tame. Everything is tame. In other words, the Ming Vas is finished. never be able to be used again. I don't know, no one drinks out of a mikvah. It gives a bad example. But whatever item was used that is a kli is now tameh in the house. Masha kineged aruba, but whatever is exactly underneath the skylight, tahor, is tahor. Okay, so what's the scenario? The skylight means there's no roof. So whatever is directly underneath the skylight is not considered to be under the roof that the head is spreading the tumah to. So wherever the head is, wherever there's a roof above the head, is going to spread the tumah to the rest of the room. So any kalim, any items, whatever is in the rest of the room, is going to become tameh. But whatever is directly underneath the skylight is tahor, because there is no roof there to carry the tumah to that spot. Good? Clear. Tumah keneged aruba, her head rolls, and is now under the skylight. Kolabayis kulo tahor. Now, I don't know how we're going to get to this scenario, because her head had to be under the roof before it got to the skylight. So our case may not work so well. But if he decided to drop her head down from the skylight in someone else's house, there's a new house now, and he drops her head into the neighbor's house through the skylight. So now the head is now directly beneath the skylight. What about everything else in the neighbor's house now? Has everything else become tummy because the head is now in his house? So the answer is no. If the head is directly underneath the skylight and never ended up under the roof, so kulo tor, everything in the house is tor. Right? Because there's nothing to spread the tumah from the head to the rest of the house. Ein barua pasach tefach. The same halacha applies if the skylight's less than a tefach. If the skylight does not have a tefach of space, tumah babayis, then still, whatever the head is in the house, kineged aruba tohor. Whatever is exactly opposite the skylight, even less than a tefach, is still tohor. There's still no roof there. Tumah kineged aruba, if the head is directly underneath the skylight, the house remains tahor as well, because it doesn't make a difference if it's a tefach or not. Okay, so then why do we care if it's a tefach or not? If there's no nafkamina. At the end of the day, this Mishnah is saying that if there's a hole on top of wherever the tumah is, and there's no roof, then the tumah doesn't spread. It doesn't make a difference if it's a tefach, if it's less than a tefach, it doesn't make a difference. The Mishnah over there will discuss nafkaminas. This is not a nafkamina. There's no roof over the tumah. Tumah doesn't spread, period. Now, what do you see from here? Why is that true? Why is it true that there's no roof if there's only a tefach? Shouldn't we say... what? Is a tefach of a tefach skylight less than three tefachim? Is a tefach less than three tefachim?
Yes.
Shouldn't we say that the window is considered to be much smaller, like closed? Why? Because of what principle? Starts with the lamed. Lavud. Don't we say lavud? So why should you say that there's not considered to be a roof wherever the skylight is, whether the tumah is underneath it or the mingvaz is underneath it? It doesn't make a difference because there's no roof. What do you mean there's no roof? Lavud. Unless we don't say lavud in the middle of a roof. Ha! See from here, we don't say lavud. Be'emtza. Yeah? Clear. Clear. The idach. So how do you translate idach now? The other opinion that holds we do say lavud be'emtza. The idach, the other guy. What's he going to do with this? It's a mishnah. He answers, Shani Hilchas Tumah. Hilchas Tumah are different. Ahachi Gemira Lahu. That's the halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Those are the laws of Tumah. What do you want from me? What? So I'll give you one way to understand this. He's saying Tumah is different. That's what he said. That's his answer. Tumah is different. Tumah is different. Why is Tumah different? So one way to understand this is what they say. I've told you this before. In the name of the Vilna Gaon, that when the Torah says, if you don't know what to do, you ask the Sanhedrin. Yeah? When you ask the Sanhedrin, it says, Ki yipalei mimcha davar. Is this anybody's bar mitzvah parsha? Ki yipalei mimcha davar, bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, bein nega lenega, divre rivos bisharecha, vekamta v'alisa lemakom, etc., etc. If you don't know what to do, you have to ask the Sanhedrin. Instead of the Torah saying, ask the Sanhedrin, the Torah decides it's going to tell us, and it doesn't make a difference what type of case it is. If it's dam l'dam, blood and blood, din l'din, judgment and judgment, nega l'nega, like tzaras to tzaras, divya rivas misharecha, if it's fights between people, it doesn't make a difference. Why did the Torah just say, whenever you have a question, ask the Sanhedrin? Why does the Torah have to divide between different categories of halacha? Says the Vilna Gaon, because you need to remember that not all categories overlap. Just because something's true in a case of Tumah V'Tahara does not mean it will be true in a case of Sveikas of Isser V'Heter. That's the great example. Safik D'Raisa, L'Chumra. Safik D'Rabbanan, L'Kula. But Safik Tumah depends if it's in Rishos Yachid or Rishos Harabim. Why? Because Tumah V'Tahara is different structures, it's different halachas. It's not the same. It's not like Safik D'Raisa, L'Chumra doesn't work like that. Depends. It's just Yachid, it's just Rabbin. It's totally different. So that's his answer. His answer is, Shani Hilchas Tumah, Dachi Gamirilud, you can't bring me rayas for Sukkah from Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara. No such thing. They do not necessarily overlap, and that's different. Okay, end of story. So what do we know from here? That it's a machlokes. It's a machlokes if we say, Lavud Be'emtsa. Gemara goes on, Darish Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi Darshin, Ba'ayis Shenav Achas. If you have a house, and remember the roof blew off, it's missing. There's a missing spot in the roof. So you filled it in with schar. Kshera. It's kosher. Right? Remember, we were saying the whole time that you have to say dorfan akuma. This has come up before, right? Amr lefanav Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi said in front of him, Rabbi, Parish, explain this. This is true in every case, any scenario of a house that has a hole in the middle, you can fill it up with sach and it'll be kosher? Can't be. How can it be? Kach pirish abba. So thus explained my father, arba amos psula. If there's four amos of space between the walls and the hole, it's no good. Pachos me arba amos kshera. But less than four amos is kosher because we say, doifen akuma. Okay, so no big deal. The Gemara here is just spelling out, because we quoted this, that yeah, the only way that you can say this is when it's less than four amos to the wall. Then the Gemara has a tangent, because a lot of times the Gemara likes to quote people twice. The Gemara says, Darish Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Avroma Sharia. Avroma? Or whatever it is, what's an Avroma? So if you take a look, two lines down and right, and wide lines in Rashi, right in the middle, Rashi says, Avroima min dagim kitanim, some kind of little fish. Vein shrutzim nikarim bohem. And parasites, or various forms of shrutzim, whatever those are exactly, well, I'm going to call them parasites. Who has one of those other translations over here?
Shrutzim?
Yeah. No, shrutzim could be anything. But in our case, I'm going to translate parasites. Benji, is he translating? How does he translate it? I'm curious how he translates it. Yeah, in our case. Shrutzim in general mean just anything that's a creepy crawly or it's in the water or whatever, bugs of any kind, could be shrutzim.
Does that appear in the Torah? Then
yeah. But in our particular case, we're dealing with a fish and a certain type of sheretz. So I'm going to translate it as a parasite for now. Avruma, this type of fish, sharia is mutter to eat. Right? So he said a certain type of fish is mutter. Amr lefanav Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi said in front of him, just like in the previous case, Rabbi Parish, explain what you're saying. Is this true? This type of fish is kosher no matter where you find it? Kach Amar Abba. My father said, Shalmah Kompleini Asura. If you find the Avroimi fish in a certain place, it's Asur to eat. Shalmah Kompleini Muteres. It's only Muter if you find that fish in a specific place called whatever. Like Abaye said, just like in the following case, that Abaye said that Tzachanta fish in this river called Bav is mutter. My time, why is it mutter? Maybe it's because it's what, a strongly flowing water? Redifei maya. I guess it's a very fast flowing. It's like rapids or something like that. Maybe that's what you're saying. Who cares? What's the difference if it's a redife maya? V'hai dag tamei, and an unkosher fish, kevan deles lechut ashidra, since they, generally speaking, don't have backbones, like eels and whatnot, right? Shrutzim, I don't know, shrimp. Shrimp don't have backbones and have spines.
No.
So they don't have spines. Lematzi kain, then they can't be there. You won't find any of those fish without spines in rapids. The Gemara says, what? V'haka chazinan dekai. We see that they exist. They are there. Ella, so then what's the point of a bayou? What's a bayou trying to say? Ella mishum demelichei maya. It's because it's salt water. V'haydag tamei, and the non-kosher fish came in the lesle kilfei, since it doesn't have scales, lo matzi koi. It can't survive in the salt water. Because the salt water gets inside of the fish or something, and it needs scales to keep out the salt water. What? V'kakazinan dekoi. We see that fish live in those kinds of waters without scales. What are you talking about? Maybe it's because Rashi says, "Lo marbi tinayu dagdame, ein titch aloysay nor magado umau mashkitz whatever from shkatzim remasim." Maybe it's because they don't produce tinayu dagdame. The tinayu, the I don't know, the pitch is a really bad word. The soil, I don't, what do you call it? The sand that's underneath the water. Silt. Maybe it's because the silt doesn't produce a dag tame. It just doesn't have the qualities necessary for the fish. Okay? You just don't find them there. Amar Ravina. V'ha'idna, nowadays, the shafchi nahar a son, v'nahar gamda lehasam asira. Since nowadays, there are dry riverbeds and also other types of rivers that flow into that same river, what it was called, Bav or whatever. So Asira, they're prohibited. So originally in times of Abaye, so the fish that lived in there, it could only support kosher fish, but nowadays things have changed. And now there are other silts and other nourishments that are flowing into there, and therefore other fish are there, and there could be fish that are tame, so you can't assume that every fish that's there is kosher, something like that. It's a very unusual Gemara. I want to make a comment quickly before we dive into Mincha. So, number one, you see from this Gemara at the end over here, FYI, just because the nature of something began one way doesn't mean it has to be like that through all time. You have to know what's called the Metzius. You have to know the Metziut HaDvarim. You have to know reality as it is. Just because a halacha was true at one point in history, halacha does not change. But reality does change. And so if reality has changed, then it could very well be the halacha will change as well. Not because halacha changes, halacha is always the same. But if the reality changes, then the halacha will not be the same halacha in that given situation. That's very important to keep in mind. Second thing, I wanted to say this quickly, I know everyone that wants to daven can get out of here. But this Gemara says that there's a problem of parasites on fish. This is a big issue and a fascinating issue. An issue that revolves around spontaneous generation and all kinds of really interesting things. I will try to say a regal achas. If you are curious, you want to clarify this, so come back to me or we'll discuss it tomorrow morning if you're interested in more. The bottom line is like this. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to eat worms. Worms are a form of parasite, sometimes, depending on what kind of worm it is. And you're not allowed to eat worms. They are certainly called shrutzim. If you find a worm in the stomach of a fish, you're not allowed to eat the worm.
Are you allowed to eat the fish if you found the worms inside?
In the stomach, yes. If you find a worm inside the flesh of the fish, the Gemara says you are allowed to eat the flesh of the fish with the worm. You may not want to because it weirds you out and it grosses you out, but that's your problem. That's a seminary girl issue. But midin, the din is that it is mutter to be consumed. It is not apparently considered a sheretz hamayim, a sheretz of the water. Why is that? Well, traditionally, it was understood by many, maybe not all, because it's the result of spontaneous generation. These creatures were not born of the water and swallowed by the fish and ended up somehow in the fish. these creatures were produced by the flesh of the fish. And I'll prove it to you. Leave the fish meat out on your counter for a few hours, a few days, and you will notice that all of a sudden it produces flies and maggots and all kinds of things that are obviously spontaneously generated by the meat. Now, we all know in the year 2017, 57, 78 of the Zman that we exist in, the Zman Hazeh, there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. So why is it that worms, which are shratzim, that are found in the flesh of fish, are permitted? So years ago, I don't know exactly how to pronounce this, there was a certain type of worm that was very common in fish. And that worm was a parasite, and it was either eaten by krill and little crustaceans and whatnot, and then eaten by kosher fish, or maybe the kosher fish just ate the worms, whatever it is. But the bottom line is, that there is a certain type of worm that is very common, that is consumed by kosher fish. It is swallowed, goes into the stomach, what? It's one form of it. There's nothing called and I don't remember it. Whatever. So this type of worm ends up in the intestines of the fish, and then you know what it does? It bores through the intestines and gets into the flesh of the fish. And that's how it ends up in the flesh of the fish. Where did it start? In the intestines, in the stomach of the fish. It obviously came from outside the fish. So there were many that wanted to say, anytime you find worms in fish, there's manazeh, it's a really big problem, because even though the Gemara says that worms and fish are mutter, and that paskin that way in Shulchan Aruch, we know that the worms all come from the stomach of the fish, and the fish then goes ahead, and the worm bores itself into the flesh of the fish, and therefore, since we do not believe in spontaneous generation anymore, all of these worms would be usur bizman hazeh, and we can no longer follow the Gemara or the Shulchan Aruch. Other people say, well, that's impossible, because in the times of the Gemara, why would it be mutter to eat? Because they just didn't know science? Maybe it was a different type of worm that doesn't exist anymore. The type of worm that they had is different than the type of worm that we had. So Rebelsky said, wait a minute, but that means that they didn't have the type of worm we had. Because if they had a different type of worm and also our type of worm, then they would have to say it depends on the worm. And if you don't know which type of worm it is, then you're going to have to say all worms are usher as exeret. It's an esher deraisa, eat a sheretz. And if since it's impossible, who's going to know how to tell the difference? All the worms. Ami Aretz are going to know the difference. You have to be a Din Darabanan. You would have to be at least ask the Darabanan to eat worms and fish. And that's not true. So since the halacha is that worms you find in the stomach and the intestines are asr, and worms in the flesh are mutter, it must be that we have to explain it without spontaneous generation. So Rav Belsky said the following. You know what spontaneous generation means? It doesn't mean it comes from the meat. It means that because the item, the egg, the worm, whatever it is, started off so small and so microscopic that you can't see it with your naked eye, in halacha, it doesn't exist. That's why you're allowed to open your mouth and swallow air, even though there are plenty of microbes and all kinds of things, we don't call those bugs. Because they're microscopic, they don't exist in halacha. Because of that, things that are spontaneously generated, that come from the meat, are viewed in halacha as coming from the meat. And therefore, those types of things are mutter to be eaten. They're not called jasheretz hamayim, because when they're in the mayim, they're not big enough to be considered a sheretz. Once they're in the flesh and they start to grow, now they're big enough to be considered a sheretz, and since they grew in the meat, they are mutter to be consumed. That's how Rebelsky paskins, zichron livracha. So because of that, the emotions seem to hold this way as well. So there are those that insist you have to remove worms from the flesh, because we assume they had to have come from outside the fish. But there is a legitimate approach in the poskim to say that since it grew in the fish, not spontaneously generated, but because things are too small, they're too microscopic to be considered in existence before they were growing in the flesh, then that is v'alach l'maisa. That's what the Gemara referred to, and that's what Shulchan Aruch refers to, and it did not change from the time of the Gemara. It's always been exactly the same, and it is mutter because it is not considered a sheretz hamayim. It is a sheretz of the flesh, or whatever you call it, and that is mutter to be consumed. A very, very fascinating idea. So our Gemara talks about the shratzim are problematic. Is not talking about those types of things. He's talking about other types of things that you won't be able to separate or something like that. We'd have to discuss that a little bit further. What exactly is our Gemara referring to?